Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Radio is dead on arrival. And it pains me to say that because I had a career in radio.
A former radio programming executive talks about some recent changes to the AM radio industry. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, November 7th, 2013. I'm Ryan Bouzion. In the trial of Bell's former assistant city administrator, testimony got kind of weird today. Angela Spacia is on trial for the misappropriation of public funds. In court today, there was talk of hair transplants, weight loss camps, and fat salaries. Katie Davis is at the Los Angeles courthouse where the trial is taking place, and she's ready to walk us through it. Katie, can you hear me?
I am here.
So what is the vibe like right now in the courtroom?
Well, you know, this has been going on a long time. It started in 2010, so it's kind of a long, drawn-out process. Angela Spacia is the former assistant city manager of the city of Bell, and her trial started in October 23rd, and she just took the stand this afternoon at 2 p.m. And the question the jury is considering is not whether or not city funds were misused in Bell, but whether or not Spacia was one of the masterminds behind the plan. And the defense is arguing that she was just a pawn to her boss, city manager Robert Rizzo. And Spacia's defense began today by giving a lot of background information. She explained her history of employment with the city of Bell, and she said she was impressed by Rizzo when she first started working with him. She said she thought he had the perfect management style, and she said she spent a lot of time working from home out of the office between 2005 and 2010 because she was caring for her ailing grandfather and for her son. During that time, she said Rizzo kept paying her, and she said she did feel, quote, a little guilty about that, but Rizzo assured her that it was just part of his management policy. In October, Rizzo pled no contest to 69 felony charges and is facing 10 to 12 years in prison. At that point, Rizzo's lawyer said Spacia was the main architect of the corruption. So there's a lot of finger-pointing. Five members of Bell City Council have already been convicted earlier this year. Spacia is facing 13 felony counts for misappropriation of public funds, and her trial is the final phase of the Bell scandal trials. So she's still on the stand at the moment.
Okay, can you give us some perspective on how much money is involved in this case?
So, as some perspective, as of 2010, Spacia was making over $500,000 per year, and her boss Rizzo was making over $1 million per year. To put that in perspective, Bell is a small town of fewer than 40,000 people, and the mayor of Los Angeles in 2010 was only making around $200,000 per year. So you can see that it doesn't quite add up.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me, Katie.
Thank you.
Advocates for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights are celebrating a key victory. Today in the U.S. Senate, a bill was passed that outlaws discrimination in the workplace. But as Denise Guerra reports, the legislation faces an uphill battle in the Republican-controlled House.
The Employment Non-Discrimination Act is designed to stop employers from firing or refusing to hire workers because of their sexual orientation. Though more than 21 states have laws protecting the LGBT community in the workplace, this is not the case on the federal level. Many are cheering today's ruling in the Senate as a win for bipartisanship, with 10 Republican senators joining Senate Democrats on the bill's passage. This includes John Musella, president of the Log Cabin Republicans of Los Angeles, a group dedicated to increasing inclusivity within the GOP.
Well, I certainly hope that we can all, as Republicans and Democrats, agree that everyone should be treated equal as Americans under the law. Republicans need to get on the right side of history, and this is a great opportunity to do that.
But the bill is expected to have a tougher time in the Republican-led House. Conservative Republicans say a non-discrimination act will lead to frivolous litigation and cost American jobs. But in a study released this week, Jose Bauermeister from the University of Michigan found workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation has major health and psychological effects on individuals.
That actually has a huge implication to who then starts thinking about whether or not they should participate in the workforce, and also whether they should be aiming as high as they want for the type of jobs they want, fearing already in advance or anticipating that they could have another event similar to this one.
Despite skepticism for the bill passing in the House, LGBT advocates see the victory as a growing sign of acceptance of their community in the legislature. Denise Guerra, Annenberg Radio News.
The nation's fourth and eighth graders are doing better than ever in math and reading. But some say the record scores aren't enough to close gaps internationally and here in the U.S. Logan Healy has more.
The 2013 Nation's Report Card released today shows the vast majority of students are still not getting high marks in math and reading.
I think that the latest results from the Nation's Report Card were pretty discouraging.
That's Stanford education professor Eric Hanischek.
Our performance on these tests is extraordinarily important for the future of our economy, and we are not internationally competitive now.
The biannual report by the National Assessment of Educational Progress says less than half of all fourth and eighth graders are proficient in math, and just over a third of those students hit that mark in reading. Students of all races are showing improvement, but USC education professor Morgan Polakoff worries the growth isn't happening fast enough in some areas.
Policies like No Child Left Behind have caused modest gains in achievement. On the other hand, I think that what they haven't been able to do is really narrow the persistent achievement gaps that we see between racial ethnic groups and socioeconomic groups.
White students again outperformed their Hispanic and African-American peers despite efforts to reduce the gap. Polakoff says any interpretation of today's report card should be taken with a grain of salt. He says policymakers are likely to skew today's data to support their own agendas. Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
The Wilshire Boulevard ramp to the San Diego Freeway opened this morning after months of construction to relieve congestion at the busy interchange. One biker who was passing by the new ramp said it would be a welcomed addition.
I think it would be a really great thing for the 405 to reopen sometime soon, so when I ride through here on my bike, I'm not fighting all the construction guys.
The new ramp is wider and three times as long as the original one. This work was part of a $1 billion widening and reconstruction of 10 miles of the 405 through the Sepulveda Pass. Mayor Eric Garcetti says the recession is in the rear view mirror. He says now that it's time to start rebuilding the economy. To lead that effort, he named Kelly Bernard to be the permanent deputy mayor for economic development. As interim deputy mayor, Bernard built a team focused on economic issues. Bernard's vision includes generating more jobs and helping businesses thrive. A new apartment building opened today in downtown Skid Row. The building is a step in the right direction to ending homelessness in Los Angeles. Reporter Matthew Tinoco has more.
The day started with music and ended with finger sandwiches, but everyone there never lost sight of who really matters.
Today, we are celebrating the end of homelessness for 108 men and women.
That was Anita Nelson, the CEO of Single Room Housing Corporation, a nonprofit organization. SRO works primarily in Skid Row, where they transform dilapidated buildings into affordable housing. Today, they were celebrating their latest accomplishment.
The Gateway Apartments is the gateway to new beginnings.
What makes Gateway special is its attention to detail. All of its residents have their own studio apartment, internet terminals, outdoor space, laundry, and secure parking. SRO makes a special effort to employ its residents too, and 40% of the organization's own employees are people who were once homeless too. But where some people see a step in the right direction, others see waste, believing that the public money used in the project would be better spent elsewhere, on different projects affecting more people. Nelson disagreed.
People who are homeless use the hospitals more frequently. They use the jails more frequently. In fact, they're paying substantially more by those means than affordable housing.
For Nelson, affordable housing is the answer.
The smart move is to put their funding towards more affordable housing, getting people off the street, and that way you'll reduce the number of people coming in and out of jails, the emergency room for their health care needs.
In 29 years, SRO has opened 29 buildings on Skid Row, and with a number of projects planned, the organization has no intention of stopping. Matthew Tinoco, Annenberg Radio News.
It looks like we can leave our sweaters at home for the next few days, LA. Tonight we'll be dipping into the mid-60s, but tomorrow we can expect lots of sunshine and 76-degree weather. These moderate conditions will carry into the weekend with temperatures around 74 degrees on Saturday and 78 degrees on Sunday. The lows throughout the weekend will stay in the mid-50s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we hear how free public Wi-Fi will soon be coming to South LA. The number of mentally ill people killed by law enforcement has been skyrocketing in the past couple years. Jasmine Ha Eng is one of the victims that has been involved in that situation. Since her death, her sister Nancy Eng has dedicated herself to getting police trained so they are better prepared to handle people with mental illness. Zhao Chen reports.
Jasmine Ha Eng suffered from mental disorder for more than 10 years. Last year, a sheriff deputy shot and killed her when she was wielding a hammer in the waiting room of the Rosemead Mental Health Clinic, according to the Pasadena Star News.
It was 6 days before her 31st birthday. For the Christmas before, a family bought her a laptop, and she wanted to save it until her birthday to open it. So she never opened her closet.
That's Nancy Ann. Her sister's death has turned her into an organizer who's focusing on how the police deal with the mentally ill.
They need to deal with folks with mental illness differently. They need better training. They need to understand that they cannot approach a mental health crisis situation like they would approach a criminal activity. Because folks with mental illness, they're not criminals.
Thousands of volunteers took part in the walk. They held banners that read, "No health without mental health," and "I love someone with a mental illness." Shelley Hoffman was another organizer of the walk. She says the population with mental health issues has grown.
1 in 4 people will experience a mental illness. That's bigger than AIDS, it's bigger than breast cancer, it's bigger than most of those things. So it's really imperative that law enforcement officers learn about how do you de-escalate a situation.
Linda Boyle, mental health clinic program head at the LA County Department of Mental Illness, has been training law enforcement for more than 10 years. She says sometimes police officers face dangerous situations when dealing with mentally ill.
If that person has a gun and he's pointing the gun, the officer doesn't have time to say, "Oh, gee, they have a mental illness, let me back up, let me see what I can do." He needs to keep you safe and he needs to keep him safe. And whatever he has to do at that moment, he's going to do. So a piece of it is more training for law enforcement. But another piece is, what can we do to get those folks the help that they need? That's a big piece that's sort of missing right now.
Recent research published in Lancet found that people suffering from mental illness are almost 5 times more likely to be the victims of murder than the general population. And a stigma that mentally ill people are dangerous is part of the reason. Nancy says she will continue to advocate for the elimination of the stigma and to push for better trainings for responders so they don't react in a way that is tragic for the individuals and the families. Zhao Chen, Annenberg Radio News.
The LA City Council is looking at a plan to provide free Wi-Fi for all of Los Angeles. However, some residents say that they aren't sure if they want the city to expand its hotspot. Stephanie Monti went to South LA to see what residents there are thinking.
LA is getting ready for free Wi-Fi citywide.
All right, we're sorry about that, folks. In the year's most highly anticipated IPO, Twitter's stock soared by 77% at market close today. At the start of the day, Twitter was valued at $14.2 billion, and by the end of trading, it was worth more than $25 billion. Twitter's phenomenal rise also boosted the bottom line of Goldman Sachs, JPMorgan Chase, and Morgan Stanley. Earlier today, I spoke with Ghulam Sarwar, a finance professor at Cal State San Bernardino. We spoke about the news.
Well, it has to all do about what investors think, what how Twitter is going to earn or behave over the foreseeable future. So there are a lot of assumptions being made here. But compared to the latest IPOs this year, Twitter has really done much better than some of the other ones. The average one-day pop, that means the average one-day price rise, has been about 17% so far this year for all the IPOs. And there were about six that did much better than Twitter. Their price doubled in the first on the first day. So considering all those things, that the average was 17%, Twitter has really done well. And it has really to do with investors' expectation, how social media companies are going to be doing. Even though Twitter has really not that many revenue so far, but it's all really based on expectations about the future.
So can you explain to someone like me who isn't well-versed in business terminology, what specifically happened that led to Twitter's stock price rising so dramatically so quickly?
Well, you have to understand how the stock is initially priced. It's really five investment bankers. These are Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, and I think one of the German banks. They have the expertise to really figure out what is going to be the correct price for Twitter's initial stock offering. And typically, they like to underprice it. So they came up with this idea that the price is going to be between $26, $28. Certainly, they fix it at $26. But if we look at the history of these IPOs, typically, these IPOs are going to get a jump on the very first day. And certainly, the way these shares were really distributed, it's not really for a typical investor. These shares were allocated to some of the wealthiest investors from the investment banks, given to brokerage firms who had the discretion to really give it to some of their valued clients. So they really wanted to benefit those people.
I've been here with Professor Ghulam Sarwar of Finance at the University of San Bernardino. Thank you so much for joining me.
Okay, very good.
New leadership is coming to one of the city's most eye-catching public offices. Olga Gare English headed LA's Department of Cultural Affairs for 6.5 years. Mayor Garcetti effectively stripped her of that title this week. According to the department, it's just a small change after an extremely tumultuous era.
My name is Will Capertini Montoya. I'm Director of Marketing and Development for the City of LA Department of Cultural Affairs. The department has gone through a significant change since the economic downturn in 2008. We have had a reduction in staff from about almost 50%, from 80 staff members down to about 40 now, full-time staff members. So our resources have been significantly cut in half on the personnel side. And so that, of course, impacts the ability to manage the workflow, which continues to increase.
The staff has been slashed despite the fact that more money than ever is flowing into the organization. Small taxes on development net this group billions of dollars annually.
And those dollars are used to either create arts programming or permanent art or installations on or near the sites of those projects. And so as more and more of those projects increase throughout the city, it takes more and more people to run those types of programming.
A new cultural affairs representative will be appointed in January. The FCC has announced plans to help all AM radio stations across the nation survive in a constantly changing media landscape. But will the FCC's efforts make a difference? Law Murray heard from some people today about the status of AM radio.
Before there were iPads, laptops, cell phones, and television, radio was established as a groundbreaking medium for mass communication. And before anyone was listening to the hot new single on the FM radio, there was the AM dial. In an effort to revitalize AM radio, the FCC has proposed changes in regulation that would allow those stations to stay on the air.
Before I Love Lucy, Lucy was doing a radio show that was essentially I Love Lucy on the radio called My Favorite Husband.
That's John Phillips, host of the John Phillips Show on KABC AM in Los Angeles. He says that AM radio has always had a place in media and always will.
This radio station, KABC, is the first talk station in the country. And everyone said that we would be dead back then. And here we are in 2013, and we're doing live shows, and we're making money, and we're putting out content.
However, some media experts, like longtime broadcaster Jerry Del Coliano, still believe that radio has an expiration date.
AM radio, you're going to save it? I don't think so. Radio is dead on arrival. And it pains me to say that because I had a career in radio.
The FCC specifically wants to eliminate or loosen rules that prevent stations from broadcasting at night, as well as create ways for stations to improve reception through empty slots on FM dials. An official from the FCC told ARN that the process towards implementing any changes could take up to a year, but it is important to hold on to AM as a national service.
They're very important in terms of the total communications infrastructure of the country. And I think that's the message that the commission's been trying to get out and will continue to try to get out throughout this process.
While there are some people who still love AM...
Do you listen to AM radio?
Yes, I do. I love it.
Others wouldn't notice any changes in regulations.
To be honest, I didn't even know that AM radio still existed.
The FCC is receiving comments on their website about the proposed changes to AM regulations. AM radio has stood the test of time for this long, but it is clear that there are still many challenges ahead for the medium's place in the hierarchy of communication. Law Murray, Annenberg Radio News.
Sunny day, just mountain clouds away, no turning back, come what may, I've never seen the sky so damn gray.
To positively affect people and to heal people at its essence is what my job is, so as close as to that I can come, then the happier I am.
That was Andre Sky on the Venice Beach Boardwalk.
Last night, a stone was my pillow, hungry belly out in the cold. Never humble to the struggles, how I lost control.
Sonic City!
And now we're going to go to that previous story about Wi-Fi coming to South LA.
LA is getting ready for free Wi-Fi citywide. That's great news for 21-year-old Destiny Walker, who rides her bike about 12 blocks to the nearest Starbucks on Slauson and Western just to get online.
If I could just be wherever I want with free Wi-Fi, like, I'm going to be, like, everywhere.
The average Angeleno household pays about $75 to $100 a month for Wi-Fi. Walker, who lives in a low-income area, says there aren't many people in her neighborhood that can afford it.
Probably, like, two people in the radius of, like, 15 miles that got Wi-Fi, so like there's probably like three Starbucks and a couple McDonald's that have Wi-Fi, but who wants to sit in McDonald's?
Ruben Lizardo is the Associate Director for Policy Link. He says the $6 billion project comes at a price.
To use the internet this way will actually be subject to all the advertisements and all the different things that come with having a vendor like this. They want South LA's power, so we shouldn't give South LA's consumer power away for nothing.
The new fast internet access system will require installation of fiber optic cables in all homes and businesses. The city is still taking bids to build the system, but some residents are already skeptical. They suspect the winner will get more benefits from the contract than the people who use the service. Bobby Buck does community work with local youth. He and other community organizers worry what users will find with greater, faster access to the internet.
Big Brother's getting very clever. What they say about anything free comes with consequences. And even when you use library computers, they're slower than a turtle.
Shauna Sterling and Shaisha Houston are health organizers. They meet at their local Starbucks on Slauson just to get online. But Sterling worries about exposure.
The bad thing is that our kids are already exposed to a lot, and that'll give them more free range on the perverts and just the things that they don't need to get a hold to.
Houston has other things on her mind.
You know, as citizens, I think that's just another scheme to get into the homes of everyone in America and use something free as a reason to invade people's privacy. And, you know, the average person will be like, oh, cool, it's free, yeah. But they're not understanding what they're saying is, yeah, come on, invade my privacy. You know, so it's kind of like a hidden agenda.
Nearly 70% of American adults have a high-speed broadband connection at home. If the plan is implemented, LA will be the country's largest city with free universal access to Wi-Fi. Stephanie Monti, Annenberg Radio News.
George W. Bush has been largely out of the public eye since he turned over the White House to Barack Obama in January 2009. New York Times chief White House correspondent Peter Baker has written about the 43rd president's 8 years in office in a new book called Days of Fire, Bush and Cheney in the White House. But it was President Obama that hot seat host Max Schwartz had on his mind when he talked to Baker earlier.
So it seems like what he's doing with the press is sort of going against what he ran on in a way. Would you?
Well, I certainly believe he ought to have more press conferences, more opportunities for reporters to ask him questions. What they think they're doing, in effect, is trying to go around the press to some extent. Mm-hmm. If Reagan did that in his own way back in the 80s, Obama does it today through Twitter, through social media, through the website that they have, the White House website. And they think that they can get out an unfiltered message that way. But I think that you lose something without engaging more with the press. And this president doesn't like to do the quickie day-in, day-out kind of interactions and two or three questions at a time kind of pool events, we call them, that other presidents have done in the past.
You can catch the full interview with Peter Baker on our website at AnnenbergRadioNews.org on the Hot Seat Podcast. All right, now we're going to check in with Jeremy Chen to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Jeremy?
Thank you, Ryan. Our top story at 6, Typhoon Yolanda is set to hit the Philippines, but the islands have already felt the effects. We'll have the latest on that on our storm coverage. Embattled Toronto Mayor Rob Ford can't seem to escape his crack-smoking scandal as new video has surfaced of him shouting death threats. And finally, the FDA is planning on banning trans fats. We talked to people at Chano's for their reaction. All this and more coming up at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Stay tuned to watch ATVN. Back to you.
Okay, my friends, that's it for this Thursday. We had help today from ATVN, Allison Brett, Jacob Ellenhorn, Ashley Wong, Victor Figueroa was on the boards, Graham Clark produces our arts and culture segment, and the newscast producer is the one and only Jerome Campbell. Our executive producer is Catherine Davis, and for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Ryan Bouzion. Stay classy, LA.